you're stuck. You put in more hours, you write more notes, you're more stressed, yet your marks barely move. Your patience, your motivation, it's all waning. Now you're questioning yourself. Am I cut out for this accounting thing? You begin to wonder if you've reached your ceiling. It's lectures. You enter the lecture hall for another seemingly futile session of financial management. Ugh, and to boot, today it's one of those attendance mark lectures where we're dealing with study strategy. Just great. What a waste of time, you think. Then, to open the session, the lecturer asks, "Who are you learning with?" You never really thought about it. It starts to sink. It hits you like a truck. Maybe it wasn't just about working harder, but working smarter, working together. Could networking be the missing piece? Today, we are joined by Kevin Burtis, the best photographer you've never met, CASA, corporate content creator, founder of Meek Media, and host of the Shift podcast. We chat about how networking might be the missing piece in your study success. We also chat about the crux of why mathematics skills are key for accounting, how he survived accounting without having done it in high school, limiting academic beliefs that he had to overcome to excel, the 7 degrees of separation in networking, and more. I hope you enjoy. My travelers on the road to CASA. In the spirit of our esteemed guest that has joined us today, in the spirit of his expertise, I will say it again, get on LinkedIn. I know, why must a student get on LinkedIn? It seems kind of counterintuitive. Alunga, I have nothing to show. Alunga, I'm still studying. I promise you, it's not that big. It's like creating another TikTok account. You don't really need followers just yet, per se, but it could really help to create and establish a presence. Get on LinkedIn, guys. Like, you don't even have to start posting. Just literally be on the platform, start spectating, get a feel. I promise you, just being there is a good step to start. Get a profile photo as well. But I'm not the expert. Kevin is. It's an amazing episode we're going to be embarking upon. On to the show. Welcome back, my people. This is the Road to CA podcast, the show for aspiring chartered accountants to inform, inspire, and empower the difference makers of tomorrow. Today, this one's an exciting one, guys. We have a man of many talents and a man of hard work and excellence. He puts in 110% in every single thing he does. But don't take it from me, guys. Take it from the star-studded portfolio of clients he's worked with. He's the CEO and founder of Meek Media, a company which has provided video, photography, and podcast services to the likes of Hollard, Brawl, Wits Business School, Amazon Web Services, Carte Blanche, Jet, and many others. We could go all day. Yes. By the way, just matter of fact, he's a CASA. Just by the way. Most importantly, he's a Christian man of faith. A family man who's a husband to his wife, a father to his two boys, and a servant of the community running the Family Hope Foundation. He's a corporate content creator. He's a creative. We're joined by Kevin Burtis. Kevin, how are you, man?
Oh, bro, you're far too kind with your introduction. Feels like you're setting me up here for something. I can at least meet a bit of that expectation, yeah?
The nice thing about my intros is I never lie. That's the nice thing. You know, I'm trying to be ethical, trying to adhere to the fundamental principle of the code of professional conduct of Psyca, of integrity. Yeah. So I didn't lie, man.
No, it's all good, man. You're on point. It's just always, you know, sometimes when you're faced with that truth, you're like, yeah, people are gonna expect a lot now, eh? So you better step up.
The nice thing, and Kevin, like, I actually, this is an idea that we were chatting about, was it last week with another aspiring CA, about how this pressure to meet those sort of qualifications, expectations. A lot of us feel like imposters when we don't, right? That's imposter syndrome. But there's actually a power in it. Imposter syndrome actually has a power for you to act in that standard that others expect of you. So I fortunately know you actually do have the competence that backs you, and you have the experience to give the value that I know aspiring CAs are going to get today. So it's going to be a good one.
Sharp. Let's do it.
Okay, Kevin,
Yeah,
firstly,
man.
let's go back. This is what we do at the Road to CA. We go all the way back. Where did this whole CA thing come into the picture, and slot in who Kevin Burtis is in that answer?
Sure. All right. My name is Kevin Boertus. I'm a qualified CASA. And the CA thing, actually, I'd only probably heard about it properly in my matric year. So I did my high school at a school in Bosmont. It's kind of like central South Johannesburg, westish. If you're going to look on the map over there, it's at a high school called St. Barnabas College. And they didn't offer accounting as a subject. So that's a first crazy fact to kick it off. So I achieved quite well in my maths and all my subjects going in, and I didn't know what I was gonna do, in the following year. So just to backtrack from that, my parents had passed on while I was still young. My mom passed when I was 10, and my dad when I was 17. So for the most part, I was actually raised by my siblings. I've got four brothers and a sister, and they
Sure.
really did their
Thank you
best
very
and
much.
tried to raise me. And you know what I mean? When you see the amount of effort and work that those guys were putting in, it really set a good tone for me, albeit under difficult circumstances. But when you see people putting in the graft, working, on Christmas Day so that they can get double time, in call centers, that kind of thing, then you realize, like, hey man, you gotta hustle and you gotta make it happen, in an ethical, in a good way. So in any case, so I didn't know what I was gonna study afterwards. I had gone through most of my high school with partial bursaries, to just help me along. And then somebody had recommended to me, I'd done like a Miller-Briggs type indicator test, where they kind of classify you, and one of the things was an accountant that they said on there. And then there was a lady at my school that said, hey, why don't you try applying for some bursaries and just see what happens on that. So I had applied through to PwC, through to Deloitte. Both had offered me a bursaries, but not throwing shade at anyone, but PwC, they only came back to me after varsity had actually started the next year, and they were like, yeah, we'll give you a bursary. But at that time, I already said, look, I'm going with Deloitte. Deloitte were on point, they were a great family to help me out, and they took a chance on me, I think, to an extent, without having not touched an accounting textbook of my first day into varsity. But it is something I think that's worth noting. I studied at UJ, and actually at UJ's policy, they don't require you to have accounting to study the chartered accounting route. They make sure that you have your maths. In fact, I had some friends that aced they got distinctions for accounting at high school, that had to take the bridging course for the CA
Sure.
route because they didn't their maths wasn't up to scratch. So
Yeah.
I guess in the grand scheme of things, maybe they knew something that we didn't. But
Yeah.
I got into the program over there, and man, it was crazy. So first year, I mean, you walk into a hall there at UJ. It's a hall of 400 people. There's two classes of it twice a week. So I would have been attending four of those classes. Then there was an accounting A, which was kind of like, the accounting standard grade class for guys that weren't majoring in accounting. I was attending that class as well because I didn't know what the hell was going on in the accounting in the CA stream.
What's a
And
debit?
just
What's
to
a
get
credit, eh? Yo.
bruh, like one of my friends fortunate, like I made friends really fairly quickly. You know, with, okay. there was a bunch of us that were in there, and one of my friends, her name's Rania. She gave me a breakdown of what an income statement looks like you know, revenue, cost of sales, gross profit, and I went home over the next 3 days. I tried to memorize what this actually was, because I didn't even understand these terms, bro. Like, what the hell is OPEX? In principle, I understood what it is, right? But it wasn't there. But, you know, I mean, if you think about it, the accounting things, all of these classifications, it's actual business. If you run an actual business, this is just ways of classifying it. And just a side note, by that time, I'd already been running like two or three side hustles. By the time that I started varsity, I was doing the photography thing. I'd kicked it off in my matric year. I used to buy and sell PS1 games, PlayStation 1. Yes, I was there with the PS1, guys. I used to buy the games and sell them. And yeah, just like, you know, just hustle wherever you can up until that time. So like, I understood the concepts already from a business perspective. I just didn't know what OPEX is. I didn't know what cost of sales, what is, like, you know, how it actually slots. So anyway, got through first year. I studied like you won't believe, like crazy. Still till today, probably one of my greatest achievements is getting 50% on my first accounting exam.
Whoa, like that's hectic.
You know, the basic one.
We don't get 50. You know, all of you guys.
Yeah, all of you guys that did accounting. Yeah, you know that one. You just cruise by. We didn't even study because they asked you what is a debit or what is an asset. It's a resource controlled by an entity as a result. You know, I got through on a 50. Like, that was like my crowning achievement. Because it was just a realization that, hey, maybe you can do it, you know. But so I think the important thing what they did with why the maths was so important was the idea of concepts, of abstract concepts. You know, if you've ever done any algebra or geometry, you know, that sucks. But it's the stretching of the mind, being able to understand it. And being on the back foot, I had to work like 2-3 times as harder than the guys who go on cruise mode. So I was always lagging, always falling behind the guys. But come back like mid-second year, going into third year, that's when it actually turned in comparison to again, like, you know, my counterparts. Because they had already, they understood the basics and that stuff, it was a cruising. But because, and I'd been grinding and like really trying to put in hours to get things. Come third year, there was a switch. Now you started getting deeper into the IASs, into the IFRS. And because I'd been used to working like significant hours, like trying to put in the work, like it was just, you know, whereas for other people it was like stepping on a treadmill because suddenly it just started shooting past. So a lot of the guys dropped off over the years. We were 13, I think, that started in first year, and there was only two of us that had actually gone the whole way through without repeating. And that's a general thing. You probably see it as well, even when you are there in Pretoria in your classes and that. Generally, it's almost like the classes reduce by between 30 and 50% each year. You would have, it's something along that lines. If you're talking about first year, like one or like, you know, first year to first year. So you'll come into a class and there'll be lots of people, but a lot of the guys are maybe repeating second or third year and you like going in with them. So it's a normal, like, I don't want to say normal, right? But that's the way that the things progress.
How it usually goes. People fail in accounting. That's just how it usually goes.
And I'll tell you something, like, I was very fortunate, I mean, that I had a bursary with Deloitte. I had friends who had to work while studying. So that was like really, really tough. I remember I had a friend who had failed a CTA, a fourth year, at Deloitte, and Deloitte allowed it. It was the 1 year. I think they only did it once. They allowed those guys to go and do their first year articles during the day. And in the evening, they would then come to, they had an arrangement with UJ where they would do evening classes in our honors year. And so they would come from a full day of working in articles and then still try to put in graph. And like, I think the pass rate on that class was something like between 15 and 20%.
It makes sense because...
But I had a friend that pulled it through. Yeah. So it was like...
Oh, dang. That's another thing that actually me and my brother, we had an episode and he spoke of how, yes, there's this 15 or 20% success statistic, But if you go deeper into the statistic, if you do what the 80 to 85% people do, you are 100% likely to fail. If you do what the 15 to 20% did, you're 100% likely to succeed. So there's always a story beneath the statistic. As much as the odds will be stacked against you if you're in your articles and you're doing CTA, if you are in that context right now, I promise you there's someone out there. And Kevin's, he's clearly showing you there was.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's just the wisdom comes in on knowing what's the difference between the 20 and the 80. That's where the challenge is coming in, right? Because it's again one of those cases where you don't know what you don't know. Because that infamous guy tried explaining that, I remember once, and everybody got confused. But like, you know what you know what you don't know, you don't know what you know, and then you don't know what you don't know. Very confusing to try to explain it. But effectively, like, it's difficult to understand what the other 20% is doing if you've been doing 80% your whole life and all your friends are doing what we classify as that 80%. So it's in the networking, it's in the speaking to the lecturer, it's in that kind of thing where you get somebody else's counter view, then they'll be like, oh wait, I've been doing it like this the whole time, but you're telling me to do it like this. And that's what helps bring about that change.
A new perspective. So, yeah. That's what I'm also finding through the podcast. It can change a life. So I actually failed my third year in accounting because I didn't know why I was here. I was coasting throughout. I wasn't really serious. And then I found out about different paths. I found out about more opportunities, a vaster, you know, a more vast future beyond CASA. And then I was like, yo, I messed up. If I had found that out in first year, I wouldn't actually have been in the place I am. But I can only say that in hindsight.
Yeah, and that's the thing. But let me tell you, this hindsight thing, it's still something that I grapple with. It's still, I wish I'd done some things differently in the first year. I wish that I'd networked better through my articles, you know. But it's one of those things that you can only appreciate after having gone through it. And it's many years since I did it, and I still have that regret. It's regret hindsight. And it's just being able to be at peace that, I think where I take my piece from, and this is going to be my encouragement to you and to anyone, really effectively, right, is if you can look back and say, did I do my best? Like genuinely, like, did I do my best on it, right? Because we can't ask you for more than your best. If you had given your best and there's circumstances that are outside of your control that happen, you can't change that. But internally with what you do, and that's what's going to allow you to sleep at night. But it's when you're not doing your best. Like if you have that honest conversation with yourself when no one's around, and you realize, like, actually I stuffed up. I was partying too much.
Yeah. And there's always the behind. There's always a beneath the failure, and if it was because you weren't giving your best. But the thing is, Kevin, I think that everyone's doing the best with what they have. That's what I actually think. I think that it's because there's maybe a specific piece of information that you don't have. Maybe it's because of a particular belief that you have of yourself. I think like everyone's doing the best with what they have. But now what more information does is it lifts the ceiling. It increases that best and it changes your perspective. And now you can, let's say for an example, if you were when you were going to school and you were growing up told that you are X level of intelligence, you are not smart. That's the belief that's permeating your mind. And so the actions will follow the same. And maybe you just won't work hard in mathematics because you just don't believe that you can do well in it.
Yeah. Bro, let me tell you, I 150% subscribe to that. And if I can just it's a side segue, but it'll segue in.
Okay.
I was generally like a top student in most subjects, but this Afrikaans thing I just struggled with, bro. It just didn't make sense. Albeit I'm like colored, I'm supposed to come from an Afrikaans speaking people, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
But I just absolutely struggled with it, you know, grade 8, grade 9. It just, like, it wasn't making sense. And then we had this really, towards the end of grade 9, I had a really, really good Afrikaans teacher, Mrs. Kruger. Like, you know, this old white lady that had enough money, but she was still teaching us just because she could, because she loved what she did. And she would do these tests where if you got 20 out of 20, she'd give you $20, you know. And I was never in that range, right, because I was always getting like 15. And it was like these weekly tests. You had to learn the words, and then you had to write a sentence with it and all that. And one of my best friends at that time was like super bright in Afrikaans. His dad would write out all the sentences for him to memorize and that thing, right? He was never getting the 20, never getting the 20.
Mm.
And then once, just in one paper, it's probably a fluke or something. I mean, I tried the once. And I'm sure this woman had grace on me because there was probably some errors or something and she liked me. But she gave me 20 on the paper.
Mm.
There was something that clicked in that moment, apart from getting 20 rand. Like, and I mean, this is now many years ago. 20 rand actually held value, right? Like proper value. But there was something that clicked that said, why not? Again, you don't know what you don't know, and you need somebody else to just see, like, you know, that sees the potential of something that you have in you.
Mm.
And that, I promise you, sparked off something where I went from like maybe like number 12th or 13th in the grade to being the top student thereafter in Afrikaans, grade 10, 11, and 12. And I got the distinction in it in matric. Now, I'm not saying it to brag on things, but what I'm saying is that sometimes it's just the confidence, the classic, you know, Mandela line, it's only impossible until somebody does it.
Mm.
You know, it's only impossible for you until somebody just gives you the belief that you can do it, and then you go and do it.
Mm.
So very much, I think that is, like you said, like, you know, you put your best, but it's your best according to your standard as well. And that's what you were talking about, raising that ceiling.
Mm.
Because once you realize that, hey, maybe I can do this, then suddenly your best is better than your previous best.
Exactly. So, like, I really think at every level, I think we're doing the best we can. All we need is that little nudge, that little push. Yo, that story, you came back. You came back, Kevin. You mentioned that you regretted something. And I want to go back there. And it's a point that I actually would have loved to go with you.
Yeah.
You regretted not networking enough. Let's talk about networking. In fact, before this, when we were chatting in like the pre-chat that I usually have with my guests, you mentioned this idea of the 7 degrees of separation. Can you explain networking, some of your tips around it, and explain that idea of the 7 degrees of separation?
Yo, it's quite the epic thing when you. So this is now the idea. It makes sense now with LinkedIn. If you use LinkedIn now, this concept will make more sense. But now let's just talk a pre LinkedIn. There was this, and I don't know who it is that sparked it off, but they have this the idea that every human on the earth is connected via 7 contacts. So it's these 7 degrees of separation. So I don't know Barack Obama or, you know, just as an example, but I probably have somebody in my network who knows somebody else, who knows somebody else, who knows somebody else, who knows Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. So if I could work out that trail, I could in theory get in contact with him. And LinkedIn makes some sense of this because you have like your first connection, and then you have a second connection, which is basically a connection of your connection. And I hope I'm trying to clarify it without confusing people, but it's this idea that everybody is connected on it. So if you are able to make an impression on your first network, the people that are close to you, and thereafter make an impression on the second and the third, it really does help you when you're trying to reach out to somebody else because you've got this good rapport with your first, second, third connections on right. And if you realize how small the world actually is and how you can be connecting to everybody, then suddenly it becomes a game that is playable by anybody. It's not just for the well-connected or the affluent. While it does help, of course it helps. Of course it helps when your father is Nicky Oppenheimer. You know what I mean? That does go ahead of you, right? But it doesn't cancel you out of the game. Stacked up against you, but you're not out of the game.
That is a powerful idea for, I think, students to also realize that guys, on LinkedIn, if you're on LinkedIn, if you're not on LinkedIn, get on LinkedIn. Yeah. You know one person that knows another person that knows a person, maybe, or we could even go a bit back on that, that could hook you up with the next job, with your articles, with the job beyond CASA, with a new perspective. Like, those are the people that are actually within your grasp. And I think it's such a powerful idea for students to start now. You know, start now. Like, you don't have to wait for when you're a CA. You can start now. Get to know people now. Get a LinkedIn. I think that's a huge one. Connect with Kevin. His LinkedIn will be linked in the show notes. And he's, yes, he's there. He's one of the people who are there to give. And he's got this wealth of knowledge around the platform. And he's willing to extend a helping hand. In terms of networking still, I want to even go deeper on this one. There was this idea that I realized that, you know, when they say the cliche of it's not about what you know, it's about who you know.
Yeah.
I think it's missing something, and it's something I've realized with the podcast. Yes, it's not about what you know, it's about who you know, but it's also about who knows you. And can you riff off of that idea quickly?
Yeah. Who knows you? It's exactly. Look, so I agree with on all of those statements. Let me just break down the previous one, right? It's not what you know, it's who you know. I think there comes a point where what you know does have to come to the fore.
Yes.
Unless it's like politics. We see some people that don't know much that are really high positions because of what they know. So that's where that cliche actually does find feet. And the reason why it's a cliche is because people use it a lot. And why do people use it a lot? Because it's probably true, right? So who you know does make a difference, and who knows you? And that's an important thing. Like, you know, if you are on somebody's radar for whatever, however you're able to, you want to be front and center in that person's mind when they are thinking about anything remotely that's connected to you and connected to your outcomes and what it is that you're trying to achieve. So something that I try to do, and this is kind of coming in with the LinkedIn thing, I'm trying to play the LinkedIn game as best as I can. And in the LinkedIn game, a lot of it revolves around your connections that you have, but also how you show up. It's a big thing. So I believe, yes, you can type things. You can, like, you know, there's ways that you can text. And let's just even talk about it on like a WhatsApp. You know, I can send you a text and you can read it however you want to read it. I've had cases, and I can almost guarantee you that you've had it, and everybody that's listening to the podcast or watching it has had it, where you misread something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you read a tone into it and you're like, what the hell? How could he say that about me? You know? And when you eventually talk to me, it's like, no, man, I didn't mean it like that. And then it's like, oh, you know? So text can have tone read into it.
Mm.
I can phone you, right? So we can speak as people that are listening on here, so that you can hear my tone, but you can't see my facial expression, right? So I can be grinning while I'm telling you something, and then you can kind of read my body language, and you know, my voice may be sprightly and stuff, but if I'm like slumped over and like, then you know I'm not engaged and that kind of thing. But when you get the combination of it, like video, that makes a big difference. So video and in person, if we can, in person is like the top end, but video is like right underneath it, where you get to see the person, you get to speak to them, you see their mannerisms, their quirks, things that make them, you know, unique, and you get to almost become likable, provided that you have things that appeal to the person. Daniel Priestley is a very, and I would recommend you guys to go and check him out. He's very, very big on this idea of being, known and liked, like in terms of becoming a key person of influence. He's like on this bus on this thing. But the idea is just that, as people see you, as they hear you, they'll either be drawn into you through your personality, or they'll be repelled. Mm. But no middle ground. We try to move away from the middle ground. And through LinkedIn, through the connections and the way the algorithm gets served and the way that you're speaking, I'm a big, big proponent of video. So even though I may not have you as a connection, as we did. I mean, let's use us as an example, right? Mm-hmm. You saw some of my videos that I post on LinkedIn, and you were like, "Oh wait, I actually maybe let me go and chat to this guy. He looks likable. I hope that he looks approachable, you know." And that's what it is. Yeah. You send me a message, and I was like, "Yeah, in line with the way that I try to communicate." I spoke, we chatted back, and I was like, you know, trying to be as chilled as I normally am. So that's a big thing. Like, how do you show up in the world? So I'm a big fan of putting yourself out there on video, and it's difficult when you start off, because we all have this spotlight mentality, spotlight theory that we have. Like, we on the stage and there's a spotlight on us and everybody's standing there waiting to judge you and to say, you know, so you're starting a podcast, how dare you? Yeah. Like, you know, like, who do you think you are that you're starting a podcast? You're not Joe Rogan. What the hell? You know? Yeah. You're showing up with your video on LinkedIn. Who the hell are you? You think you're now a movie star? And this is me. I didn't even say any of that. No, I never heard that from anybody. That's my own, you know, me talking to myself on it. But if you can get past that and actually show up, get yourself out there, people will start seeing your personality and become familiar with it. So there's times where you can meet somebody and it's almost like in their minds, they know you. Because they've seen you in video, they've heard you on the radio or on the podcast, you know, and it's your first time meeting them, but they chat into you as if, like, you know, like they know. So that's the idea of being able to, as you expand, as you put content out, you get to be on other people's radar purely by the way that those algorithms are set up to be able to dish new contacts, new connections. And it's not just LinkedIn, it's your Insta, it's YouTube, it's pretty much all of them. That's how, you know, people, that's how they're trying to push it to grow networks and that. So I don't even know if I answered your question at the end of it all.
Absolutely.
But yeah, that's...
Absolutely. I asked you to expand on the idea. And I think what we just did now links perfectly into the topic, which I think it's life-changing and it's huge for all aspiring CAs, which is
to be continued in part 2. See you next week.